Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Equitable Tolling and Federal Torts Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On April 22, 2015, the Supreme Court issued its decision in two related cases, United States v. Wong and United States v. June. In both cases, the central issue is whether the time limit for filing a lawsuit or claim with a federal court or agency under the Federal Tort Claims Act can be suspended or tolled for reasons of equity. In an opinion delivered by Justice Kagan, the court held by a vote of 5-4 that limitations periods under the Federal Tort Claims Act are subject to equitable tolling. Justices Kennedy, Ginsburg, Breyer, and Sotomayor joined Justice Kagan's opinion for the court. Justice Alito filed a dissenting opinion, which Chief Justice Roberts and Justices Scalia and Thomas joined. The decision of the Ninth Circuit was affirmed and the case remanded. To discuss the case, we have Professor Richard Peltz-Steele, who is a professor of law at the University of Massachusetts at Dartmouth School of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Peltz-Steele.
On April 22, the Supreme Court decided two consolidated cases construing the Federal Tort Claims Act, U.S. v. Wong and U.S. v. June. The court majority, 5-4 per Justice Kagan, ruled in favor of the claimants and against the government in both cases. On the face of the majority opinion, Wong and June come off as straightforward matters of statutory construction, but there's more going on under the surface. The cases gave the court a chance to wrestle with some fundamental questions of statutory interpretation. And the 5-4 split reflected the familiar but always intriguing jurisprudential divide. Let's start with some basics. Like any government, including the monarchy before the revolution, the United States enjoys sovereign immunity. It can be sued only when it says it can, which it does by statute. Early in our history, claims went to Congress directly. In 1855, Congress created the U.S. Claims Court. In 1887, the Tucker Act, named for Virginia legislator John Randolph Tucker, sent contract claims to that court. Slightly expanded, the Tucker Act is still around today. But it wasn't until the Federal Tort Claims Act of 1946, the FTCA, that Congress waived federal sovereign immunity for tort claims. FTCA bills had been around for years, but it was after a B-25 bomber in heavy fog crashed into the Empire State Building that Congress was motivated to grant tort relief to victims. So fast forward 50 years to see the facts of our consolidated cases. In 1999, Kwai Fung Wong was detained by the Immigration and Naturalization Service in Oregon on suspicion of illegal entry into the country. Wong is a Hong Kong native and British citizen and a minister of an East Asian universalist faith. She alleged in a lawsuit that INS officials violated her rights by strip-searching her and denying her vegetarian meals before she was deported. About the same time she filed her lawsuit, in May of 2001, she filed a negligence claim with the INS. So here's how the FTCA works. A person has 2 years in which to file a claim for relief and has to file first with the allegedly offending administrative agency. Wong did that. A claimant then has 6 months from an agency's denial or failure to act to file a claim in federal district court. There things got naughty for Wong. The INS denied her claim in December of 2001. She already had a civil rights case going in court, so 4 months after the denial, she asked the federal district court for leave to amend her complaint to add the FTCA claim. The district court granted leave, but by then, 6 months had come and gone. Wong filed, but the government moved to dismiss, asserting the essence of its position in these cases. The limitations periods of the FTCA are jurisdictional and are not subject to equitable tolling. Nevertheless, the district court sided with Wong. Wong's companion case, June, dealt with the initial 2-year limitations period of the FTCA. In 2005, Andrew Booth was killed in a fatal car crash in Arizona. June was conservator for Booth's minor son in a wrongful death action against the state and its contractor, alleging negligent installation of highway barriers. According to June, it was 4 years after the accident, in the course of litigating the state lawsuit, that she discovered the Federal Highway Administration had concealed its negligence in approving the barriers without proper crash testing. So June filed her claim with the Highway Administration in 2010, by then 5 years after the accident. In June's case, the district court granted the government its dismissal, saying the FTCA period had run. The Ninth Circuit en banc held that the FTCA limitations are not jurisdictional and are subject to equitable tolling, affirming Wong and reversing June and giving both claimants the green light. So the government went to the Supreme Court. Solicitors argued that Congress intended the FTCA limitations to be jurisdictional and not subject to equitable tolling. After all, the government reasoned, the FTCA is a waiver of sovereign immunity. It's strictly construed to minimize government exposure, so any ambiguity should be resolved in the government's favor. Moreover, the 1946 statute copied the earlier Tucker Act, declaring claims after limitations to be forever barred. But throwing a wrench in the government's argument was a 1990 case called Irwin v. Veterans Administration under the 1964 Civil Rights Act. In Irwin, the court made up a new standard. No one disputes that. The Irwin court opined that law-by-law adjudication of the congressional intent behind limitations was generating inconsistency and uncertainty. Instead, the court would have a new rule, a rebuttable presumption that goes like this. Limitations periods in federal law are not jurisdictional, so can be tolled, unless Congress makes a clear statement to the contrary. So Wong and June's lawyers made a straightforward argument. There's no clear statement in the FTCA, so its limitations are subject to tolling. Kagan led the majority, joined by Kennedy, Ginsburg, Breyer, and Sotomayor. The court 5-4 affirmed the Ninth Circuit, siding with Wong and June. Irwin controlled. FTCA limitations are non-jurisdictional for want of a clear statement, so claimants are entitled to equitable tolling. The Irwin rule of rebuttable presumption is a realistic assessment of legislative intent, Kagan wrote, better than the old rule of ad hoc fidelity to Congress. Usually a limitations period is just a claims processing rule, so Congress has to do something special to tag a limitations period as jurisdictional. The FTCA uses ordinary, run-of-the-mill language, Kagan wrote, so it doesn't do anything special, and there is no clear statement in legislative history. Kagan explained as mere legal rhetoric the coincidence of language in the Tucker Act and the FTCA. And anyway, she wrote, when the court reaffirmed Tucker as jurisdictional, it did so because of stare decisis, not because of the Irwin rule. Quoting Justice Brandeis, it was more important that the rule be settled than that the rule be settled right. Kagan also rejected the government's argument of strict construction of sovereign immunity waiver, that the FTCA was enacted in a different era when Congress might have had different expectations is still not a clear statement. And the FTCA's own history and language can be read to support equitable tolling. Limitations and jurisdiction are in different sections, and the FTCA expressly likens the United States to a private person for purpose of tort liability. Kagan wrote, the FTCA treats the United States more like a commoner than like the crown. Justice Alito dissented, joined by Roberts, Scalia, and Thomas. According to Alito, the text of the statute, its history, and more than a century of precedent all point the other way. On the text of the statute, Congress plainly intended a strictly limited waiver of immunity, fearful of open-ended tort liability. Causes such as libel and slander and remedies such as punitive damages are disallowed. 9 of 31 FTCA bills in Congress expressly authorized equitable tolling, and Congress passed a bill that did not. The FTCA used Tucker language, which has been construed invariably as jurisdictional, and lower courts caught on to the likeness, construing the FTCA likewise. Irwin doesn't even come into play, Alito reasoned, when the court lacks jurisdiction to begin with. But even if he was wrong on jurisdiction, Alito argued that Congress still intended no equitable tolling. That's clear in the forever barred commandment. What Kagan found run-of-the-mill, Alito found no weak need commitment. Pointing to grammar, Alito opined that limitations usually direct themselves to claimants, such as a person shall or may file. Forever barred is a passive structure, focusing on the defending government. The conventional takeaway from Wong and June is that it's now easier to sue the government. If you have a case that's late under the 2-year or 6-month limitations and you would be entitled to equitable tolling in a private civil action, you can now get equitable tolling against the government. Congress can always change that rule if it wants to. But under the surface of Wong and June, there's more going on. The oral argument in the case sometimes delved into a surreal level of abstraction, revealing powerful currents in jurisprudence. A deeper question surfaced in Justice Kagan's point about fidelity to Congress. Both sides on the court agree in principle that legislative intent controls, but the court created a problem for itself in Irwin when it changed the rule to a convenient facsimile of intent. The majority does not reject the argument that Congress legislated in 1946 against a backdrop of strict construction and jurisdictional limitations. But the court decided that in the absence of undeniable precedent, the Irwin rule controls, regardless of whether the statute in question came before or after Irwin in 1990. That position runs headlong into a declaration by Justice Alito that the meaning of the FTCA course, cannot change over time. It's worth noting that the decision in Irwin was authored by Chief Justice Rehnquist and joined by both Kennedy and Scalia. But Scalia here sides with Alito. Scalia quipped in oral argument that the claimants seem to want a living FTCA. So this case about statutory interpretation reverberates with broader ideas about the role of the courts. Wong and June ask, what happens when the court changes the rules of the interpretive game? Can a legal context later in time be dropped in behind an earlier Congress, even when everyone knows that's a fiction? Scalia bought into rebuttable presumption in Irwin 25 years ago, but he refused to apply Irwin when it seemed to defy legislative intent. So on the surface, Wong and June are straightforward, applying the Irwin rule to construe the FTCA limitations in favor of claimants. But at a deeper level, the divide in Wong and June concerns the role of the courts vis-a-vis Congress. One side on the court, more willing to wield judicial prerogative and challenge Congress to keep pace. The other side of the court, more determined to cast itself as mere umpire, calling balls and strikes.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.